Red's Bench. Saturday and Sunday from 6 p.m. Red FM.
Welcome, welcome, welcome along to the Big Red Bench here on Cork's Go Times Red FM. Dan Casey with you on this Saturday. The latest from Twickenham, Ireland 17 points to England's 13 points. A tight contest there, however, far from done yet. Fairly fiery going down the tunnel at half time as well between the two sets of coaches. What a win Italy had earlier in Rome, beating Scotland on a scoreline of 31 points to 29. Their first home win in the competition in 11 years. To a bit of Premier League now. Manchester United seemed lucky to be leaving Old Trafford with a win against Everton today, winning it thanks to penalties from Marcus Rashford and Bruno Fernandes. Darren Standage had the full-time report from Old Trafford.
Manchester United 2, Everton 0. Two first half penalties give United the points at Old Trafford. The first 9 minutes, Garnacho fell by Tarkowski in the box, converted by Fernandes. And on 35, again the Argentinian fell, this time by Godfrey, and upset Rashford to score. That doesn't really tell the full story of the game. Both sides were wasteful. United gave the ball away so much, particularly in the first half. But Everton wasteful too. 24 shots, didn't capitalise on those opportunities. Garner Foster, good save from Onana in the first half. That was pretty much it. More control for the game in terms of United's favour in the second half, and it's ended a comfortable scoreline. United 2, Everton 0.
Elsewhere it finished. Sheffield United 2, Bournemouth 2, Wolves 2, Fulham 1, Crystal Palace 1, Luton Town 1. They scored an equaliser late on. And in Arsenal's game against Brentford at the moment, it's currently Arsenal 1, Brentford 0. That one thanks to a Declan Rice goal. Now to domestic football, and Cork City's women team are in action for their first of the season against champions Piemont United. The score in Turner's Cross at the break is Cork City 0, Piemont United 1. Then the men's team are also on the road this evening. The Rebel Army are away to Longford Town, who are managed by former Cove Ramblers boss Stephen Henderson. Colum has been chatting to City boss Tim Clancy about the game, their start to the season and more.
Right, Tim, you're coming into it on the back of a win last week in Turner's Cross. How's the week been since then?
Yeah, it's been good. Just this early in the season, it's difficult to analyse teams, and there's obviously new players, there's teams changing formations and whatnot, and I think last week I mentioned it was very difficult to see where UCD were at. They had only 10 men for 70 minutes the first game against Bray, they had a great win out there, and then the second game against Treaty, they had the Collingwood Cup where they played four games that week. That was the fourth game that week, so it was difficult to see where they are, and I think last week showed they were very, very good, loads of energy, and to come away with a 3 points and probably not playing to our best was really pleasing.
Yeah, you got the win, but it was a tough game, and UCD put it up to you, and obviously there was the sending off in the end then as well.
Yeah, again, listen, Barry's tried to stop a counter attack, and he's tried to just clip their player's heel, and it's funny when you look back in the video, their player takes like a half step and then jumps, which results in Barry missing the heel and then landing on the back of his heel. So that was obviously a big blow, and the bigger blow was now he's been charged with violent conduct, which I didn't think it was violent conduct. I think it was probably, if anything, probably reckless, and I can totally understand why Chris has given him the red card, but disappointing that it went down as violent conduct, and he has to serve a 3-game ban now.
And to be without him, I suppose, for 3 games this early in the season, when you probably have injuries to deal with already, it's not ideal.
No, it's not ideal, and I think when you look, just probably a little bit of inconsistency in regards to the officiating is what I suppose everybody always talks about, is the frustrating thing. And I think the start of the season against Kerry, you see the Kerry player volleying Jack off the ball, and it results in a yellow card. I think that's a far worse tackle than Barry mistimed his tackle against UCD to begin. And listen, it's probably a serious foul play, because he's caught him on the Achilles with his studs. And the frustrating thing is probably getting the extra game, but yeah, listen, we have a couple of players coming back, full training. Dara's been in full training now, Dara Crowley, for this week. Bagsy's back in as well this week, practically did the full session today, so he'll up it again tomorrow. And Greg's back as well, so he has a week's training now behind him after getting minutes last week, so we're getting players close to return. I know Murph's back on the pitch tomorrow to do some running, and Malik should be back on the pitch running next week, so we're getting close to a full strength squad, and the points return in the first 3 games, and hopefully on Saturday if we can get another win is a brilliant return, considering we've 4 or 5 first team players are out.
And it's Longford now on Saturday. And I mean, you mentioned how it's hard to judge teams this early in the season. And they've only had one game so far as well, because their game against Bray was postponed last week. So they've only had the first game against Benharps that you can really judge them by. So it's hard to get a feel for teams this early in the season.
It is. Listen, I went and watched them live against Athlone in pre-season, and also against Shells in pre-season as well, the day we played Bohemians. We went over and watched them against Shells in the first half, and then we were there as well live for the first game of the season in Longford against Finn Harps. So turning up in that game, and Harps showed really good character to come back. But listen, I know a few of the Longford players personally, and I know a lot of them from the league over the last lot of years, and they've got a lot of quality in the team as well. So again, they're coming in having 2 weeks break, which I don't know if it's a benefit or a hindrance to them, but again, we prepare the best way we can, and hopefully they put a system in place to go and try and get the 3 points.
You've changed the team in every game this season so far, the first three games. Is that the way it's going to continue, or is it going to be kind of utilising the squad all the time, or are you going to settle on a kind of a, not necessarily a definite first 11, but on a kind of a likely team?
Listen, there will be changes throughout the season. I don't think we're going to go and win a league title. That's the ambition of this club, and it's what the expectations and ambitions should be this season for us. And I don't think you win that with playing the same players every week. You have to have a strong squad, and I think the ones that we mentioned there as well, I didn't mention even little Matty Kiernan, who will probably be out for another month or so. He actually got a hairline fracture in his leg against Kerry after 5 minutes, finished the game off, but scans have showed that he's got a little fracture in his leg. So he's another one. So there's probably 5 or 6 players that could easily play and start in the starting 11 who are injured at the minute. And you add in Conor Drinan, took a knock last week, and he missed out last week, and he'll miss out this week. That we have got injuries, but we have a good squad. There's a lot of good young players there as well, and we're going to need to have the whole squad to try and have a successful season. And I've no doubt that, like, each week very rarely will there be the same 11, the same formation every week.
Looking at the fans again, big crowd there again at Turner's Cross last week, and being a Saturday night game this week, there should be a good few following up to Longford as well.
Yeah, we hope so. We had a good few up there for the Finn Harps game as well, which is obviously the longest journey in the League of Ireland. So again, we're hoping that we can get a good few up to Longford, which is normally a good pitch as well. It's difficult this time of year with most grounds. It cuts up quite easy. So, but no, we're really looking forward to the game, and if we can get a good following up, we're hoping that'll be a really good atmosphere, and that's up to us to produce the goods on the pitch to get the fans right behind us.
You mentioned the grounds cutting up as well, and I mean that's kind of been an issue so far. I mean, certainly you mentioned it in the game up at Finn Harps, and the pitch wasn't great at Turner's Cross the other night either.
No, it's hard to have the perfect surface to start and end the seasons when it's the summer league. I suppose there's multiple reasons for going that, but majority of the main reason would be games won't be called off because of weather. So it is difficult when you get to January, February time, and spilling into March if the weather's not great, and then probably end of September, October, November time as well, the pitches can be heavy. But it's not ideal. Obviously everybody wants to play in a good pitch. I think if you look at the teams in the league, in the Premier Division and the First Division, the majority of teams will play football, so the better pitches will suit every team, and I think it certainly would have suited us last week, but also UCD as well, how they play. So I think the sooner the weather calms down a little bit and the pitches get a time to recover, I think we're better for our products for the whole league.
And you think it's better for your squad specifically, that like the players you have and the style of football you want to play to have the pitches in better condition? Obviously,
I just think
maybe other teams can deal with it easier.
Not at all. It's a lot of the pitches will affect how any team play, whatever style of play teams have, and it affects everybody the exact same. So it's just navigating your way through the first round of games where you're getting eyes on teams when you're playing against them, against your players for the first time, and also the conditions and the weather and whatnot. So it's trying to get as many points on the board as possible. And listen, we've had a decent enough start after 3 games. We want to try and add to that now on Saturday night and just try and get a bit of momentum going to finish off the first round of games.
Brilliant stuff out of Tim. Cullum has also been speaking to Sean Murray about he's been settling in on Leaside.
Sean, did you find anything out of Cork City so far?
Aye, it's been enjoyable so far. Obviously I had a bit of pre-season here and really enjoyed that, and I got myself up to fitness, which was what I needed at that sort of time, and in the year, so yeah, I've enjoyed it. The first couple of games personally have been okay, not set the world alight, but there's definitely time for that to come.
And how do you judge the club as a whole and the squad around you and the management and all that? Is it a great setup or is it a good setup? Are you enjoying it?
Yeah, I think it's, for the last while, it's probably the best I've been at. The setup, the way things are run, the professionalism at the club, the everything we have here, the training ground, the gym, is to a really high standard. So that just makes you want to push on and do better as well, having everything there.
7 points returned so far from the three games. A hard fought win, I suppose, last week in Turner's Cross. How do you rate the start of the season so far?
Yeah, it's been, I think it's okay. I think we could definitely play better. I feel like only conceding the one goal we have, that's brilliant for any team. Stop the goals going in your own goal. We can always work on going forward. Obviously Jack's been brilliant getting the goals, but we need to back him up with that and help him on that, on the goals tally. So I'm sure that will definitely come in the games to come.
Longford now, it's a tricky away ground always up in Longford, and it'll be no different this weekend. They've had only one game so far, so they've had a bit of a break. How do you rate that? Do you think that's an advantage to them, or would they be better if they had been playing consistently for the last 3 weeks?
For me, always, I feel like when you're playing, you're ready to go again. I don't like stopping and starting, but I played up in Longford a few years ago when they was in the Premier Division. I think it was during COVID, so I've not played there with a crowd there and with the travelling support, so the pitch was good when I played there, so hopefully it's the same.
Looking at the league as a whole, how do you rate the standard of the first division this year from what you've seen so far of teams?
I think it's hard to tell at the moment. I feel like the pitches haven't been great to play on, and you can't really get a proper feel for how teams play. I feel like UCD done very well, but I knew they would always be good on the ball because I've played against them a few times over the years, and they've been just a well-structured team and they move the ball well. But at the moment, yeah, it's a good standard. The way the pitches are, I feel like the way games are going is similar to how I was playing up in the Northern Irish League. It's a lot of longer balls and it's just a battle, especially Finn Harps away is a fight, really, and it's always been that way.
They're the tricky ones, I suppose, the long distance trips as well, but there are going to be a lot of kind of shorter trips. There's a lot of Munster teams in the league as well. You'd be going down to the likes of Kerry and Cove and Treaty and so on, so they won't all be long journeys.
Yeah, no, I mean, that's what I'm looking forward to as well. They're all going to be new experiences for me. I've actually played down in Cove twice. Drew them in the FA Cup, the Cup twice. So but all these new experiences will be great, and I'm looking forward to it.
Speaking of new experiences, I suppose playing in Turner's Cross in front of the home crowd as a Cork City player, how have you found that? Because I mean, there's the first game against Kerry, there was an absolutely huge crowd there. There was a big crowd again the other night. And a good atmosphere, and the crowd is right behind the team there.
Yeah, I think that helps as well. Like, obviously, both those games, the first game I thought we did really well. UCD, we were kind of holding on to that 1-0 win. We didn't create as many chances as we'd hoped, but the fans were always behind us, always positive, so I think that just gives you a bit of a lift in the game. So you want that last 5-10 minutes when they are putting a bit of pressure on that, gets him over the line, and it did last week.
Brilliant stuff out of Sean, the latest from Twickenham. With 64 minutes gone, it's England 20 points to Ireland's 17. A team under pressure at the moment, just knocking the ball on in the English 22. To some boxing now before we go to the GA after the break. And Cork's Callum Walsh is back in action this week. The Cove man headlines the theatre at Madison Square Garden once again as he takes on Darren Yelahusanov, I hope I said that correctly, in New York on Friday night, a fight that can be seen on UFC Fight Pass. The 23-year-old is 9-0 with 7 KOs and is backed by some of the biggest names in combat sports. He's trained by the legendary Freddie Roach in California, and one of the biggest promoters in the game, Tom Loeffler, is in his corner, while Dana White has thrown the promotional weight of the UFC behind him as well. Rory has been speaking to Callum about Friday night's fight night, a Cove invasion of New York this weekend, his last fight and his hopes for a fight in Ireland.
All right, delighted to be joined on the line by King Callum Walsh as he prepares to return to action on St. Patrick's weekend in New York City, a fight you can see live on UFC Fight Pass. Callum, how are you, boy? It's been a while.
Yeah, I'm all good, yeah. I'm just tired enough now, to be fair, training for this fight, but it's all good.
How has training camp gone?
Yeah, it's good. You know, it's been a long camp. I've done a lot of sparring for this fight. I've prepared as much as I can, and I'm looking forward to showing it next week.
Yeah, I mean, like, Madison Square Garden on St. Patrick's Day weekend for an Irish fighter, I don't think it gets bigger than this, Callum, does it?
Yeah, no, it definitely doesn't really get bigger than this unless you're fighting back home. You know, this is like the biggest thing you can do out here in the States, you know, and the fact that I'm able to do it twice in 4 months is crazy, you know. And people forget, you know, I'm 23 years old, you know, I'm young. It's not like, you know, I'm headlining Madison Square Garden twice in 4 months. It's crazy.
Talk to me about that experience of your last fight, Callum, in Madison Square Garden. And I suppose, talk us through, like, what you're feeling when you're walking out of Madison Square Garden. You've got Freddie Roach behind you. Like, it's just an amazing experience for me watching on as a fan of yours and a fan of boxing. But for you as a fighter, what's that moment like?
Yeah, it was a very good feeling, you know, walking out there in Madison Square Garden, even though they played the wrong song on the walk of, but it was alright, you know. It was a good feeling I got in the ring, but I try not to think too much about it until the fight's over, you know, and I get that the win, and then I really, you know, take in what I've done and what I've accomplished. But on the night, you know, when I'm just walking out to the fight, I just have one thing on my mind, and that's just make sure I win, no matter what, no matter how bad it goes, or no matter what happens. You know, I just get the win, and after then, yeah, I look out into the crowd and I see my friends, my family, you know, like my old coaches from back home, and everybody there that came to support me, and it is it's a feeling you can't even describe. You know, most people will never feel that in their lives. You know, and it's crazy that, like I said, I'm able to do it twice in 4 months.
Yeah, I watched the fight back on YouTube today. It didn't have to walk out. What song did they play and what song did you want?
So I wanted Zombie. Yeah. For the Irish crowd. I don't know what they played.
They'll have Zombie ready for you next week though, will they?
Oh, hopefully, yeah, hopefully.
How would you, I suppose, rate your performance against Ismael Villarreal? He was a very tricky customer, wasn't he?
He was, but you know, I always knew he was gonna come out and he was gonna try his best, you know, and he was gonna be the best version of himself that he could be. You know, he was fighting at home. I was going into his backyard to fight him. He was always going to bring his best, you know, and he was always going to try to win in front of his own people. So I knew he was going to come out and be the best that he could. And no, I just feel like it was a good fight for the fans. You know, everybody that showed up, it was a very good fight for them. They got 10 rounds of a fight. But for me personally, you know, I just feel like I would rate it probably like a 6 or 6 out of 10, you know, for myself. You know, I know I'm a lot better than that, and that's why I'm looking forward to going back there now straight away and just showing how much better I am than that.
Yeah, and in the 10th round, he pushed you to the floor, but for some reason the referee scored it as a knockdown. He went off celebrating like he'd knocked you out. What's going through your head at that point, or is there anything, is it just like bite down the gum shield and get to the end of the round?
Yeah, you know, it was a push, you know, and I, my hands just touched off the ground and the referee called his knockdown, and he was celebrating like he was at the win the World Cup or something. And I was thinking, sure, but you know, that probably was his World Cup, you know. That's he can say he was the only person to ever knock me down, I suppose. But I don't know, I was like, I don't know, in that moment, you know, you can't really let it get to your head, or you can't think too much about it. It was just like, right, this is after happening now, there's nothing I can do about it, I just have to just win the rest of the round.
Yeah, I had you winning comfortably during that fight. When you're waiting for the announcer to announce you as a winner, is there any doubt in your mind, or you think, right, I have this one handily?
No, I knew I won it. You know, I would have given a couple of rounds, you know, 2 or 3 rounds, he would have just stole, you know, with big shots or something maybe, but I knew I won the fight comfortably enough. So I had no doubt in my mind when they were announcing it.
So you say you gave yourself a 6 out of 10. You said there's a bit to work on. What have you been working on, I suppose, coming into this fight?
Yeah, I just want this next fight, I just want to show my skills more, you know. I want to just show, like, how much better I am, faster, sharper, you know, better punches, clean boxing, you know. I just want to be able to go in and just show that I can go in and just not get touched, you know, and just dismantle my opponent, you know. That's the game plan for this fight, just go in and just try not to get touched and just make it look very easy and show my skills.
Been seeing some videos of you online, Callum, training. You look really, really fit. Now, you've always looked very fit and strong, but for this fight, you look especially fit and strong. Is your conditioning something you've been working on quite hard coming into this?
you know, since the last fight, I haven't really stopped training. I think that's a big thing too. You know, I had no injuries. I wasn't caught. I wasn't hurting really after that fight. So I was able to get straight back into training, no matter where I was. You know, I was back in Ireland. I was doing some sparring back there in my old gym, Riverstone Boxing Club in Cork. You know, I was doing some sparring back there with some of the boys, and I just didn't really stop training. So I think, and I've been training very hard for this fight, doing a lot of sparring, like I just said, and I'm feeling good.
You're fighting Jawaren Yela Usanov, I hope I'm pronouncing that right, on the 15th of March. As I mentioned, you can see that on Fight Pass. I watched his last fight today against Pais and Penza, and what I kind of took from that was he's obviously a southpaw, but he likes fighting in close. He loves that kind of left power hook to the body, and he seems kind of comfortable fighting on the back foot. What are you expecting from him next week?
Yeah, I'm expecting to do that same thing. You know, I want to try to get in close and try to fight there, but, you know, I just want to just pick him apart. You know, I want to just get that knockout too. You know, I want to just keep it long and land some nice crisp punches and just put him away. You know, just show how I'm levels above people like him. You know.
Mm. And like, I suppose there's a lot of hype about you going into this fight. There's in every one of your fights. That pressure hasn't gotten to you, I don't think, Callum, yet, or I don't think it will get to you either, to be honest, because of the way you've been carrying yourself both outside the ring and inside the ring, as we've all seen.
Yeah, you know, it's like, I don't feel the pressure, you know. I'm always just myself, you know. I'm doing these things, I'm just showing up to a fight, you know. That's how I think of it. I'm just my job, you know. My job is to fight, and whenever they tell me to fight, that's just like going to work. And that's just my mentality, really, you know. Going to fight is just going to work.
And by the sounds of things, by the looks of things online, half of COVID's heading to New York on St. Patrick's Day. That's going to be huge. I mean, like, watching the last fight, there were so many ole ole chants going all the way through the fight, which, I suppose, do you hear that during the fight, and does it help you?
Yeah, there is times where you'd hear, right, you know, like when the fight's going well, obviously, and from landing a few combinations, and then you can hear the Irish crowd chanting. Yeah, it kind of gives you that bit of motivation, you know, to try and finish the fight. But in the last fight, I knew, you know, I couldn't rush it. I couldn't. He was very tough, you know. I couldn't rush the fight and try to finish it and get tired then, and he'd land one of his big shots, and that could have been it then, you know. So, like, you hear the crowd, yeah, and you obviously that's what you want, you know. There's no better feeling than hearing the Irish crowd behind you, but you have to know when to use it too, you know. You can't just hear the crowd and think, right, but I'm going to go for this here now and use all your energy, especially in 10-round fights, you know. It's like, you have to know when to use the crowd to your advantage too.
Yeah, there'll be a fair few Kovacs and so in Madison Square Garden next week, a few Kovacs, GA and Ramblers tops as well, I'd imagine.
Hopefully, yeah. I'm looking forward to seeing everybody, yeah.
I think your opponent lives in Brooklyn as well, so he might have a bit of a crowd rumbling.
Hopefully, yeah. I have no idea where he lives, to be honest, but hopefully.
Doesn't really matter, to be honest. But without looking too far ahead, I mean, like, I suppose we talked quite a bit in our chats before this about a homecoming fight. Is that something that still remains, like, very much in a focus for you, like, fighting back at home, be it in Dublin or in Cork, Parkyqueef, St. Coleman's Park even?
Yeah, you know, just depending on this next fight now and maybe one more, you know, see how that goes, and then hopefully get honed in for a fight, yeah, definitely. But definitely I want to get home this year, 100%. I want to get home this year, and I think Tom wants to go and Dana wants to go, so I think if the plan comes together, it'll definitely be this year.
Yeah, just lastly for me, Callum, I was watching Monday Night Raw a couple of weeks ago, and I was delighted to see your face appear on the screen. Tell me about that experience, and I suppose I saw a video of the year afterwards with Becky and Sheamus. Must have been an incredible evening.
Yeah, it was. It was good. Very. You know, it was my first time going to a Monday Night Raw or even a WWE. You know, and it was. I didn't know what to expect, to be honest. But it was some show. You know, the whole crowd was into it. Everybody knew the walkout songs. Everybody knew the whole story. They were letting off fireworks and the walkouts, and yeah, it was serious. You know, it was like, even though it was scripted and you know it's not real, you know, but it's still some buzz. You know, it's actually, it is very good. It's something that I would look forward to going to again.
Yeah, fantastic stuff indeed. Any interest in maybe turning your hand to pro wrestling down the line?
Yeah, maybe after my career, you know, something. Yeah, who knows?
Callum, buddy, I'm not going to wish you well, man, because you obviously don't need it. Cannot wait to see you fight next week, 15th of March, on UFC Fight Pass. Dude, looking forward to seeing you perform.
Perfect, yeah. Thanks very much. I appreciate it.
And best of luck to Callum. At only 23, he's quite literally done some serious damage in the sport. The latest from Twickenham, Ireland 22, England 20. James Lowe try now separates them. After the break, we'll be looking at a preview for Cork's hurling clash against Offaly and Tullamore tomorrow, as well as the Cork Camogie seniors loss against Tipperary in the very National Camogie League, with the interviews from Ger Manley and Libby Coppinger. Dan Casey here with you. We'll be right back after these.
The Big Red Bench, Saturday and Sunday from 6 p.m. Red FM. Missed the show? Grab the Big Red Bench podcast at redfm.ie. Cork's Red FM.
Welcome back to the Big Red Bench here on Cork's Go Times Red FM. Dan Casey with you for the next half hour. At half time, it's Arsenal 1, Brentford 1. And Cork City's women are currently 2-0 down against Piemont United in their game. From Twickenham, Ireland are still leading England by 22 points to 20. To the GAA now. And earlier today, I caught up with journalist Dennis Hurley about the Cork Hurlers game against Offaly tomorrow. We chat Alan Connolly and Decky Dalton coming back into the side, as well as asking, do we have a problem at goalkeeper? And of course, a prediction for tomorrow. Enjoy. Delighted to be joined once again here on the Big Red Bench by journalist Dennis Hurley. And we are talking, in fact, hurling the Allianz Hurling League Division 1 round 4 tomorrow, Cork versus Offaly in Glenisk O'Connor Park. After the win against Waterford, Dennis, surely we're going to follow it up with a win here.
Hi, Dan. Yeah, you'd have to expect that Cork would come over with a win. It won't be easy. I don't think it'll be like it was 2 years ago in Burr, where Cork had three goals in the first 10 or 15 minutes and they just really steamrolled Offaly. I think Offaly are a bit more durable now than they were then. At the same time, they do just have a point from their three matches so far. They could still mathematically probably take one of the spots in Division 1 for next year in the change-up league. But I think realistically, they'll be in Division 2. And, you know, Cork are strong favourites. Cork can still just about reach a semi-final, so you'd have to expect that after beating Waterford, they'll carry the momentum in with them and get the job done, yeah.
And speaking about momentum, do you think the return of Decky Dalton and Alan Connolly into the side will help Pat Ryan's men?
It's great just from the point of view of the management, just have extra options, especially because, you know, Decky Dalton is a guy who kind of nailed down a starting spot last year in the championship. He's a great free taker. You know, he gives you another option there if you needed it. And he provides kind of strong running, and he has a good eye for goal, like we saw in the match against Tipton Park in Crieve last May. So he was unlucky, you know, he broke a toe in the Munster Hurling League game against Clare back in January. So he's been out since then. So it's great that, you know, he's back in time to play in a couple of league matches and just show management that he, you know, what he can do and what he can offer. You know, whereas if a guy misses the whole league, it's very tough then to be in a position to kind of to do something in championship. So it's great that he's back. And then, like I say, Alan Connolly, he missed all of last year, came back late sub against Waterford a couple of weeks ago, got a very important point from long range free. You know, when it looked like Waterford really had Cork on the rack, and again, a guy who just provides something that maybe not many others do, and just a good option, a big kind of rangy fella in the full forward line, he's eager to kind of make up for last time, and it's just very, very encouraging that we do have guys returning like that and the options being increased.
Yeah, I suppose on a disappointing note, Mark Coleman's injury. Now, it doesn't look as bad as first feared, but he'd be a big loss to this Cork side.
Oh, he is, of course, yeah. Yeah, you just have to feel so sorry for Mark. To miss all of 2023, come back and go well with the club then, and look to be in a position to really kind of, you know, just kind of come back to the levels he was at. You know, such a great performer. He kind of showed that when he came on in the sub against Kilkenny and then started last day against Waterford, and just the freak injury in training. It's just so unlucky. But, you know, like you say, it's it's not as bad as feared. He will miss the rest of the league, which is understandable. But, you know, Pat Ryan was saying during the week that there's a chance he could be back in contention for the Waterford game on April 21st. You know, he mightn't be fully fit for that, but he'll definitely be able to play some part in the championship, which is very encouraging, whereas you're kind of fearing the worst when you heard the news originally. So, very disappointing, but at least not as bad as it might have been.
Do you think we have a goal a problem at goalkeeper, Dennis?
I don't think you'd be calling it a problem. You know, I think Patrick Collins had done well enough in the couple of games before the Waterford match. You know, people were kind of saying Cork's puck out isn't working well, but puck outs. The actual puckouts are one thing, and then winning is another thing. Like, puckouts are always a collective issue, and we saw that against Waterford as well. You know, when Brian Saunderson was given an opportunity, like, it's always tough making a step up from under 20 to senior, and like, goalkeepers mature probably later, no field players as well. So it's probably an extra bit tougher. I think it was always a plan to give Brian a run in one of the five matches, but it was going to take something very, very much out of the ordinary for the order to be changed. You know, this early, would say. Like, I think Patrick Collins will be the first choice goalkeeper going into the championship. And you know, people can zone in on what has perceived to be a problem position. You know, when the problem mightn't be as grave as is made out to be, and I think that's probably the case there. And I think you know, Brian came in against Waterford, and he had good moments, and he learned from the experience as well, which is exactly what you want from guys stepping up from under 20 to senior in the league. And I think definitely we'll be seeing more of him down the line.
I mean, there's possibly only two matches left before the championship. How far do you think we are off seeing the full Cork 15 out, or is it just we're going to see it against Waterford on the first day of the Munster?
I'd say that's probably what it will be. I think the one against Wexford will probably be closer to the championship 15, but you know, you don't want to show your full hand to Waterford so far out, and as well, you don't know who's carrying Knox or who has injuries, you know, or guys mightn't be fully fit and might only be able to come on as a sub. So, you know, I don't think it's a huge worry that the Championship 15 hasn't been seen yet. I think you want to have competition for places, and guys, you know, pushing each other and putting themselves in with a chance, whereas if you just had a starting 15 and then a big gap, you'd be a lot more worried. Like, there's a lot of players who are of a similar level who are all in contention, and a lot of it then just comes down to form as well. You know, who's going well as the championship approaches, who might have had a dip maybe or whatever, and you're going to be playing four matches in a fairly short space of time, so it'd be naive to think that the championship 15 wouldn't be changing from match to match as well. And you know, the opposition is taken into account as well, so I don't think it's like the old days where the championship was do or die, and it was a really, really important thing to know the best 15 and, you know, kind of have that nailed down. Yeah. I think it's a lot more fluid nowadays, especially when you can bring on five subs. I think you'd have to have faith in the management, basically, that they'll have a good idea of what it will be. It's probably maybe 10 or 11 places nailed down at the moment, and then, you know, four or five ones that are still up for grabs, which isn't a bad thing at all.
Yeah, and surely you'd expect Dara Fitzgibbon to get some minutes for the first time this year. He's on 26 on the bench.
Definitely, yeah. He's a guy who's just been nursing a bit of a shoulder injury. Again, Pat Ryan said he probably could have played before now if he was absolutely needed, and that they've just been making sure that he's fully ready rather than rushing him back and risking another injury. And yeah, like, Dara, everyone knows what he can do. He's provides such powerful running and hard work from midfield. You know, and all going well, he will be starting in the championship. It'll be good just to have, like you say, to have minutes under the belt. he'll get those on Sunday, and then you'll expect him to be starting the last match then against Wexford.
Always a tricky question before I let you go, but can you give us a score prediction for tomorrow?
It's hard to kind of nail down a score, you know, when you kind of don't know what the conditions will be like, or, you know, it's tough this time of year, you know, because the weather is so changeable. But I think Cork had 121 the last day, which was the first time they got more than 20 white flags in a match. So you'd hope that they'll kind of build on that again, maybe be a bit more efficient in terms of the goal chances. You know, they have left a few behind up to now. But you don't want it to be a complete procession either. You know, you want Offaly to be testing them, like the way they did against Kilkenny for 45 minutes of that match, like the way they did against Wexford when they got a draw. And I think they'll get that. And I think Cork will win maybe 7 or 8 points. Like, they'll probably push away late.
That's just something I saw you put up during the week online. Was Cork are shooting an awful lot closer to goal now for their scores? Do you think that trend will continue?
It's hard to know. Like that graphic was in a piece for the Echo, and kind of, you know, I mentioned that piece that it's not clear if the lack of long range shooting was because there was more traffic there, you know, with Waterford playing a sweeper and drawing a lot of men back, or if it is the kind of a conscious effort to avoid the more speculative shots. Basically, the key thing is you'd be hoping for the efficiency to stay high, because Cork took, I think, 31 shots against Waterford. They scored 121. They're only 4 wides, you know, which is good going in the modern game. I think 10 wides against Clare, 13 against Kilkenny. So that trend is definitely one going in the right direction, and hopefully that can be maintained.
Perfect stuff, and hopefully a good game tomorrow. Dennis Hurley, thanks so much for talking to us.
Thanks a lot, Dan. Cheers.
Yeah, hopefully indeed. Now, Joe McCarthy was out in Parky Ring today for the Cork Camogie Seniors clash against Tipperary. The Rebelettes losing 110 to 210, and by the looks of it, it certainly wasn't their best day out. And we also touch on two major retirements from the world of Cork LGFA during the week. Enjoy. We are delighted to be joined here on the Big Red Bench by Ger McCarthy, who's at the Cork Camogie clash in Parky Ring today. Ger, disappointing day out for the Cork ladies.
It was indeed, Dan. That's putting it mildly. The final score was 210 to 110 in Tipperary's favour, but take nothing away from Tipperary's win. Fully deserved. And they were the better team from start to finish. It was a bad day at the office for Ger Manley, the new Cork senior camogie manager, and he was coming into this game off the back of two very good National League victories on the road. But just for whatever reason, Cork just never, ever got going. And from the opening minutes, they were just that bit sluggish. You could see that. And I suppose the most disappointing aspect of it, Dan, the scoreline suggests it was close. And in the last 5 or 6 minutes, there was a flurry of scores, and it could have gone either way, to be fair. But Tipperary fully deserved it. And this was on a day where Cork created 28 scoring chances, but only managed to convert 11 of them. And that comes from Gaelic Statsman on Twitter. So, look, a really bad day at the office. Very disappointing for Ger Manley, the Cork manager, who spoke to us on the Big Red Bench afterwards. And, you know, he didn't pull any punches. It's just not good enough. If you're the All-Ireland champions, you're on your home pitch. First competitive game since you become All-Ireland champions. The performance levels just weren't there from enough players. And in fairness to Tipperary, they took full advantage.
And what was it, Ger? Was it work rate, the ball not going to hand? What were some of the main reasons for the loss?
I think one of the main ones, which really is hard to say, especially about this Cork team, is that they were outworked by a much hungrier Tipperary team. Now, Tipperary put in some seriously physical challenges. They always do. They're a physical team by nature. One or two in the first half resulted in yellow cards. It was one really nasty one on Saoirse McCartan. But look, that's what you come to expect at inter-county senior level. But what they also had, Dan, was they had their forwards were just on top form. Eimear McGrath was player of the match, and she finished with 1-4. And she also got a vital goal right near the end. But I suppose the most frustrating thing, the other side, it's so work rate, number one. Secondly, just Cork were, you know, architects of their own downfall. Like, they gave the ball away in front of their own goal late on when they were a point up and allowed Eamon McGrath force a turnover and get the ball into the back of the net. that coupled with really, really poor shooting on the day. Like, as I said, like when you create 28 chances and you don't even convert half of them, you know, it's just not good enough. Four shots went over the bar from open play, and that's just not going to be good enough. The other side of it is Cork are always a goal-scoring threat, Dan, no matter who they're playing against. Mm-hmm. You've got Amy O'Connor, you've got Saoirse McCartney, you've got Katrina Mackey, who came on in the second half. You've got Fiona Keating, who runs at them. But their goal today was an absolute fortuitous effort, to put it mildly, from wide on the right. Amy O'Connor's ball was spilled into net by the Tipperary goalkeeper, who other than that had a very, very good game. So look, they just didn't pose the normal goal threat that they do. They were outworked by an opponent, which is very rare for a Cork team. And the hunger levels were just much, much higher from a Tipperary side that just, they came here today to get a victory, because coming into it, as I said, Cork had two wins under their belt. Tip had beaten Galway after losing to Waterford, so they kind of needed a victory. And what this victory does, Dan, is it blows open the race for the top two positions to get into the National League final. Something Jermaine Lee talked to us about in the Big Red Bench before the season started. He earmarked that. He wanted Cork to get there. He just wants Cork to continue that kind of successful run that they have. But today, as I've just outlined there, they just weren't at the races, and Tipperary fully deserved to win.
Yeah, it sounds like they snatched defeat from the jaws of victory, really. I suppose any positives, Jor, from for you from today?
Yeah, there are. I mean, there's always positives to take from games. I suppose it was my first time seeing Aisling Thompson in the flesh this season, and she was back to her absolute best. She had a horrible injury last year, missed the entire season, if not the entire season. She was one of Cork's best players, especially in the first half. She swept up in the back line. Libby Coppinger in full back as well had her hands full of Rhian McGrath, and, you know, played very, very well and was very tight with her. So the defence, I suppose, and likes of Maeve Callahan as well, played particularly well. Hannah Looney was her usual all-action self, but Laura Hayes was outstanding at wing back. So there were some good individual performances, but not enough of a collective performance to warrant a victory. And from Cork's point of view, if you take a step back, look, they've won two games out of three in the National League. Would Germani like to won all three games at this stage? Of course he would. And by his own admission, Clare come to Parkyring, or sorry, the venue is yet to be decided. Clare will come to Cork in 2 weeks' time, and that's a must-win game for Cork. And then it'll come down to the final game against Galway away to see if they can squeeze their way into a National League final. But I suppose from his point of view, like when you puck 17 wides in a game, it's just not good enough. Tipperary puck 9 wides, and I mean, the comparison there, had Cork even got half of those wides, Dan, they'd have won today. So it's frustration, and I think that's the key word coming out of it. There was a lot of frustration, but still some interesting performances as well from some of the younger players. Orna Mullins is in from the start, and she's still very, very young, still very, very raw, but she didn't do herself any harm at all. But look, overall, a frustrating day for Cork, and they're going to need a far, far better performance. But by their manager's admission as well, they're going to need a reaction now before Clare visit Leaside, and I'd certainly expect one following such a disappointing display today.
Yeah, just on Clare, two games, no wins, only scored 117 in their campaign so far. Would you still be worried after today's performance?
I wouldn't be worried, but I'd be more worried than if we didn't get a reaction from the Cork seniors the next day, irrespective of who they're playing. And to be honest with you, the National League, much like the Men's National League, it's so tight. If you look at the scores, there's been very, very, hammerings, if any, in Division 1. So, like, Tipperary, as Eamon McGrath was telling me afterwards, they're off to play Kilkenny next. So there's nothing easy. I know it sounds like a cliche, but there really is nothing easy at this level. But I suppose what I took most from today is that Tipperary, as I suspected before a ball was thrown in this year under Dennis Kelly, they're physical, they're strong, but they're also very, very quick, and they've got some good young players off the bench that look like they're going to become serious players as well. Tipperary are contenders. There's just no two ways about it. Even if they lost today, I'd have come away thinking, okay, well, come Championship, they are going to be contenders. Cork will also be contenders. They're the reigning champions. But I think from Joe Manley's point of view, just coming in as the new manager and to keep that momentum going and to keep the progression and the high standards set by Matthew Toomey, you want to win every game. You certainly don't want to lose at home at any stage, no matter who you're playing against. But they will have to be on it, Cork, against Clare, irrespective of Clare's record coming into it, because we've played Clare before in Munster Championships when they had nothing to lose, and they've always given Cork problems in recent years. I would expect the same in 2 weeks' time. But Cork cannot perform as they did today against Tipperary. They've got to be on it from the opening whistle, and they've got to perform for the full 60. Otherwise, they're going to struggle. But all is not lost. Look, they've lost their first match. They won twice in the road, as I said, coming into it. They're still in contention for a National League final, but they're going to need to win their remaining two games against Clare and against Galway if they want to achieve that goal.
Yeah, do you think it's going to be the wake-up call they need?
Yeah, I think it is. I think that's exactly. I mentioned that to Libby Coppinger after I was interviewing her. I said, look, this might be the wake-up call for a lot of players who are new to it, who understand that it's quite difficult to make the step up to senior. But to be fair, it wasn't just the newcomers today. There was a lot of established players that didn't put in the performance that you would expect from them. And look, how Cork edged to win today, I still think they'd be very frustrated afterwards anyway with their performance. But the fact that they haven't means that they've now got to get back to the training pitch and do something about it. And I look, there's born winners inside in that team. Like, the core of that team from last year's All-Ireland is still there. Like some Maeve Callaghan, Libby Coppinger. Saoirse McCarthy, was a big loss today, Dan. I haven't mentioned that. The Corsair Rovers player. And she was one of their most consistent players in the two victories on the road in the National League so far. So they certainly missed Saoirse's influence, I think, in her ball-carrying ability today. But there was enough talent on the team to get the win, but they just couldn't get it done. So if a wake-up call was needed, I think it's good timing. I'd rather get the wake-up call now for the Cork Senior Camogie team than heading into the Munster Championship or in the Munster Championship itself before they hit the All-Ireland trail. So, yeah, a lot of work to do coming out of this game. But look, not the end of the world either. There's still too much talent on that panel for Cork not to be contenders come All-Ireland Championship time again. But I expect, and I think Ger Manley and his management team expect to see a reaction against Clare the next day.
I suppose, Gerard, the other big story coming out this week, there was a huge blow for women's sport in Cork, I suppose, as Kira and Dieran O'Sullivan, they bowed out from the Cork Ladies Footballers.
They did, and I know, and people who've been listening to me on the Big Red Bench down through the years, they know the high regard I hold Kira and Dieran O'Sullivan in. They've always made themselves available to the Big Red Bench, win, lose or draw, after club matches for Mourne Abbey and inter-county games for Cork. Look, I suppose, from a personal point of view, I'm sad to see them go from the Cork setup, because you're not just losing two incredibly talented players, two of the best players that Cork have produced, male or female. I put them up there in the last 30 years. And these two players have been mainstays for the Cork senior team through good times and bad. Kira, as Rory Noonan in the Echo wrote during the week, Kira is the last Cork LGFA captain to lift, you know, the All-Ireland trophy. So that just tells you, you know, Cork are in transition at the moment, I suppose. The Cork senior ladies football team, as everybody knows, they're struggling at the bottom of the league table. It looks like relegation. There's an awful lot of young players coming in. And before this league campaign started, there was about 7 or 8 established players were not involved. Now, two of those have definitely stepped away in Kira and Dieran. And I think, from a personal point of view, it's sad to see them go from a footballing point of view, but the loss of their influence in the dressing room, Dan, and in training, and the way they galvanise the younger players and have done over the last few years, that's a huge, huge loss to Cork. So Cork are in transition, and look, this is just the way it is. But these two, Kira, I mean, I wrote a book called Cork LGFA Game of My Life, yeah. And I interviewed both of those players for the book. And the thing I was struck by was just the leadership qualities of both, just the way they're natural-born leaders, they're captains, they've won All-Irelands, they've won counties, they're in the dominant Mourne Abbey senior football team, and they will continue playing for Mourne Abbey, which is great news for them as well. Not so good news for the other senior contenders in the club championship later in the year, but I'm glad to see they're going to keep doing that. Yeah, and look, as I said, they were always made themselves available to the media. They were very, very good to the Big Red Bench, and incredibly kind to me for the book with their time. And what came across was the chronic injuries that Kira recovered from, two career-ending injuries, and she still came back twice. She was just one of the toughest players I've ever seen. And Dieran, you know, at her absolute pomp and injury-free, was one of, if not the best Cork ladies forward that we've produced in this county for the last 20-25 years. She's just that good and just that influential. They're going to be huge losses to Cork. But look, Cork need to move on. Cork are in transition and they need to find the next Kira and the next Dieran O'Sullivan. But I was very, very sorry to hear them go, because I know how highly Shane Ronan regarded them both on and off the field. And it's a double blow for Cork LGFA, no doubt about it.
What's your own highlight of seeing them play, Ger?
Oh, good question. I think I could pick any of the Mourne Abbey County Finals, definitely in the recent years against Aerog. Themselves and Aerog, Mourne Abbey, they're the two of the top teams. It's not just two teams. There's three or four other clubs now starting to knock on the door. But the County Finals that they've been involved in over the last few years, when you look down on the pitch, and the dominance of Mourne Abbey was, a lot of it was down to Kira's ability to win dirty ball, you know, two against one. She'd still win the ball. She'd win a free. She'd get things going. And no matter where Dieran was on the pitch, she was either taking the attention of two defenders or she was setting it up for some of the younger players coming through from Mourne Abbey to score. I've seen them so often for Cork, I couldn't pick one, to be honest with you. But for Mornabby, always, always, and their run to All-Ireland titles, and certainly in their run in recent times to the domination of the Cork LGFA senior football scene, they have dragged Mornabby out of difficult situations on in recent years more often than not. And just their ability to galvanise that team and keep that team going, that remarkable run of senior county titles going in the county is something unbelievable. And anytime I saw them play for Mornabby, they were always on song. They always turned up and they always put in, you know, the effort. And I think that club is incredibly lucky, not just to have them, but their other sisters as well. And a very, very successful team over the last decade. But a lot of that is down to Ciara and Dearan's abilities.
Yeah, Ciara, 8 All-Ireland medals, 5 All-Stars, Dearan, 5 All-Irelands, 1 All-Star. It's going to be hard for anyone coming through to match that, sir.
Incredibly. But look, these are the standards that they set both at club and inter-county level. And I suppose that's their legacy, Dan. Look, if somebody wants to step up to the mark, the next generation of Cork senior footballers need only just go online and watch some clips of what Ciara was willing to do for both her club and for her county. Put her body on the line far, far too many times for my liking, but that's just the kind of physical player that she was. And if any young girl is listening to this and wants to play ladies football and take their game to the next level, just watch Dearan O'Sullivan when she plays for Mornabby. Don't watch her when she has the ball. Watch her when she doesn't have the ball. The hunger, the work rate, the determination, and the two players as well, I think, Dan, both Dearan and Ciara, they were very smart players. They used the ball intelligently more often than not, and they love that club. They love their club more than anything. But, you know, lining out for Cork, I know how proud they were, and their parents have been of them down through the years. And I just think they're the two kind of archetypal Cork LGFA players. One, a half forward who's willing to carry the ball into danger, take a few hits and set up scores. And the other who's always on the end of those moves, always looking for a goal. But the ability, even if she's being well marked, to be the top forward on the pitch. I mean, Ciara and Dearan O'Sullivan are the blueprint for any young footballer coming through now. If they want to be successful for their club and they want to be successful for Cork, they have to match the work rate, they have to match the skill levels, but also the passion that both Ciara and Dearan have and still have for the game. I don't think I could think of two better examples, to be quite honest with you.
Yeah, it's a dangerous time for anyone coming up against Mornabby this year. Ger McCarthy, thanks so much for joining us here on the Big Red Bench.
No better.
And it finished in Turner's Cross 2-0 to Piemont. Cork City women's team getting their campaign off to an unfortunate defeat, but a reminder, Piemont are in fact the champions from last year. Ger McCarthy also spoke to Cork Camogie boss Ger Manley after their loss.
Okay, Ger Manley, obviously disappointed with losing 2-10 to 1-10. Not the best day in front of the goal for you, but how did you assess your team's performance overall?
We were very poor today, really. All through, it was didn't start well. A lot of shots missed in the first half and that, but in general, tipper button us. And you can't any crans about the result, really. 2-10 to 1-10. They got two late goals. I suppose we were ahead for most of the second half, and I suppose, look, they finished better, and look, they got the scores that mattered.
Was it frustrating, the fact that you were architects of your own downfall with those goals because you had possession?
Yeah, we lost position twice, and look, that happens, I suppose. Look, I suppose we walked the ball out a bit, and you have to be foot perfect at times, but I give Tip their credit. They worked hard, they closed us, and look, they deserved it. Tip deserved the result today.
You've had two good victories on the road coming into this, and you've got Clare coming here now next, but look, overall, I mean, you've a lot of young players on the panel, blooding them. This is the time of year to do it. It's frustrating today, but it's a positive sign still.
Look, I suppose, look, it makes it a bit harder now to qualify for the league, because we have to go to Galway, we have to beat Clare, and look, it makes Tipper back in it now as well, so every team are back in it after today. So come down to head to heads, and we're in trouble if we're up against Tip, because they're true. But look, in general, things are going okay. I suppose we came back very late, probably see our fitness levels and probably what they should be, but you take that into account. But very disappointed the performance, not so very disappointed.
Yeah, just a final point, it is obviously frustrating for you, but you'll be looking for a reaction the next day against Clare.
Well, you're looking in training, and we need to, like, there's players need to put their hands up. Look, you need 9 or 10 players to play well to win a match, and I think we had 4 or 5 today that played up to the standard that's required. And look, we'll go through during the week, we'll do a bit of feedback and see how things are.
Thanks very much, Joe. We'll talk to you again.
Thanks,
you also got up with player Libby Coppinger.
Okay, Libby Coppinger, obviously disappointment with a loss 2-10 to 1-10 to Tipperary in the National League here, but you've got two more games to put things right against Clare and Galway.
Yeah, exactly. Look, I suppose nothing's going to be too pretty this time of the year. We're still, I guess, trying to get back into the swing of everything and get our hurling where it wants to be. But yeah, two more games, which is great. We'll take a lot of learnings from today, no doubt. And yeah, look forward to Clare, and hopefully we can, you know, build on what we did today.
a tough physical game. This is always a physical game against Tip. Is this going to bring on a lot of the players that are new to it at senior level?
Yeah, definitely. I suppose playing Tip, you always know what you're going to get. It's always going to be a battle right down to the end. And, you know, there was only a puck of the ball in it again today. So, bodies will be sore. Definitely rest up and put in a good 2 weeks of training now before the next day.
Is that the best thing about it, that you've got time now to get things right again on the training pitch? Like German, your manager, just said, like, you've an opportunity now to atone for this. And look, you're the All-Ireland champions. You don't want to lose, but you also want to bounce back as quickly as possible.
Yeah, exactly. No, look, having another game to look forward to and being able to put in a few hard sessions now will do us the world of good. You know, this league, it's very competitive and there's no game you can take for granted. And that was definitely the case today. So, we'll learn, we'll drive on and, hope to be in better the next day.
It's obviously with the new manager coming in, you're three games into the National League. I know you all know Joe Manley because he was in the backroom team for so long, but when he's the manager, it is fresh, it is different, and there's new players coming onto the panel. You won those two games on the road, but look, is this a kind of a reality check, I think, for some as well on the squad, look, that you've got to be on it from the first minute?
I think so. I think you kind of can't, you know, take anything away from Tip. They're a very good team. We have a lot to improve on, and we know that. We knew that coming out today. Certain things could have gone right today, and we could have come away with the win, but look, sometimes the loss is better and we'll learn a lot more from it. So yeah,
thanks very much, David. Talk to you again.
Cheers. Thanks, Jerry.
Brilliant stuff there. Forgot to mention it somehow in my last link, but as an FYI, it finished England 23 points, Ireland 22 in Twickenham. Huge disappointment for Andy Farrell's side, I'm sure. And that's all, folks. Dan Casey signing off on the Big Red Bench. Sarah will be back tomorrow with all the day's sporting action. Stevie G is on the way next.
Miss the show? Grab the Big Red Bench podcast at redfm.ie. Red FM.